Let's make it happen, Captain!
From Deep Inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome back to Defrag. It's a new season. Let's act like it's a new season, because we've been off for a while.
Yes, it's we've both been busy. Holidays.
Holidays, been out. Any New Year's resolutions we should know about?
Oh, no, I don't do resolutions, at least not for New Year's.
Yeah.
I do them like mid-year, so that, you know, if I've already continued for that entire half year, I don't have to worry about it. Like failing a New Year's resolution.
Oh, that's good. That's ambitious of you. I'm on the new federal fiscal diet plan, so I am scheduled to lose 10 pounds over the next 30 years, and I'm on track so far, so that's good. But yeah, you know, we were both off for the holidays. For Defrag Tools, we taped a couple episodes ahead so we could run stuff, but we tend to take stuff as it comes in, so we didn't do that. But we're back, and our first question from Scott: I was wondering when the next show is. I was also wondering if Defrag will have new shows weekly. Love the show, thank you, Scott. Yes,
and yes,
you're watching it now. This is it. So welcome, and we're here, and so we'll be here every week. So, and we had a lot of questions this time, tons of questions because they built up over the holidays, and I think for like Christmas morning. We got an unusually high amount of questions. How does this work? How does that work? So
everybody opening up their Christmas toys.
Yeah. So we'll be answering, you know, the questions over the next couple shows, I'm sure. So if you don't see your question on this show, just keep watching. All right. First, a little housekeeping here. Magic Andre on Avaio with slow boot time from a previous show. He suggested using XBoot Manager. Checking optimization, installing all hot fixes, and running prep system command. To counter on that.
No problems. XBoot Manager is a great tool. We have a few TechNet articles on it. I picked up this one because it's kind of a introductory to XBoot Manager. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different from XPerf, but it's around the same built around the same tool set. And it's just talking about, you know, XBoot Manager specifically around the startup times and what can potentially impact it. And, like, really, we've talked about this in the past where, you know, people want to say, I want to speed up my boot time. Well, you don't know what your boot time is without having a baseline.
Yeah.
A baseline is a clean image. Mm-hmm. Now, a clean image is one of two things. You've either clean installed the OS yourself or an OEM image. A lot of times, I know a lot of our audience doesn't like the OEM image and they'll clean install it. One thing to realize is that the OEM image has injected drivers that may be counteracting problems in firmware that will help speed up boot. So before you do anything with a machine, you know, if it's a brand new machine, especially designed for the OS that you're running, before you blow it away, you want to take some perf statistics of what the clean OEM installed image boot time is before you wipe it out, because you might be disappointed if you do a clean install and it's slower. And it's slower because, well, you're probably missing some driver updates that are required that are not part of the OS image but were injected after the fact. As always, you know, keep up to date, especially with new operating systems like Windows 8 that just got released. You're probably going to find a more update schedule. Like, you're going to want to check for updates far more often than you normally would with Windows 7, only because Windows 7 has been out longer. Mm-hmm. You had to do the exact same thing when Windows 7 was first released.
It's
you know, there's a gap between us producing the final RTM image and having it arrive on store shelves. There are, you know, certain things, certain optimizations OEMs need in order to make their machines the best possible.
There's probably more activity in the beginning of an operating system shelf life than there is towards the end. So,
absolutely.
Of course.
You know, so at the very beginning, you just opened up your machine, prep for the fact that you will have to run Windows Update a few times.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. You do want to stay up to date.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so Zippy V, we had a question in a previous show about audio problems with Windows Store app, and Zippy V had a link from the forums. Also, Magic Andre had a KB 2777760, and it talked about errors with audio in Windows Store app. So we'll link to both of those, but again, you know, thanks, Magic Andre, and yeah. Gelatus had a follow-up to his failing hard drive question and wanted to know where he can download the Windows 8 DVD, to which Magic Andre, again, he's going to fill in for us while we're on holiday next time, responded with IntoWindows.com, download Windows 8 ISO from Microsoft using product key. And I wasn't aware that you could do that.
Yeah, it's specifically for the folks that go online. We have a couple of different mechanisms for getting the Windows 8 upgrade. One of which is buying the upgrade media off the shelf. Mm-hmm. The other one is the pure online experience. We call it the ESD, the electronic software download.
Yeah.
Where you can just go purchase the upgrade. Microsoft will email you the key and a link to download the software, the updater. The updater itself is really, really small. It pulls down the bits, and one of the options in that download is, you know, save to USB key, save to an ISO. I always save to USB key because I can create an ISO afterwards, and I like having the flat files there as opposed to an ISO stored off.
Sure.
And ISOs, regardless of where they're from, I tend to find that they don't handle error correction very well. Mm-hmm. So I like getting the flat files.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, we provide this method so that people can offline install. You know, they're not, they'll download the bits off on one machine, but they won't necessarily install it on that machine.
Yeah.
Still have the key, you have the media, go to a different machine, install it with that key, and then you're fine.
Okay, cool. All right, from Brian Peake, has anyone else experienced the attach? My list of applications that show support notifications is completely empty, though I have plenty of apps which should show up. I've tried rebooting and toggling other notification settings, but the list never populates. I'm not sure when this started happening, but I noticed it earlier today.
Yeah, so this is the UI that he's talking about. This is a Windows 8, the Notification Center, and can show you what mine looks like. So normally it's supposed to show this list.
Yeah.
Now, there is... I just saw this question this morning, so I haven't had time to research it. I'll look into this and see if there's any known issues around that. It's likely some corruption.
Yeah.
You can either go into, refresh your PC, mm-hmm. And that could set it back to normal. But what that'll do, however, is remove your desktop applications.
Yeah.
It'll keep all your modern applications, mm-hmm. but it may recover any corruptions that you have.
Okay, but we'll check into that and we'll let you know next show. From Guarev, he says, your show is really awesome. My Windows 7 machine starts very slowly. In order to investigate, I ran auto runs, and I found some file not found entries that are checked under driver services login tab. So could it be possible that the startup delay may have caused by those checked entries that don't have executable images? Probably Windows is trying to search and load these auto start images, due to which startup delay occurred. Is my assumption true?
It's certainly a possible contributing factor, especially if these are services that have another service that is dependent on them starting. Mm-hmm. So what will happen is the service control manager will attempt to start it and it'll time out because it can't do it.
Yeah.
And then that will return a failure to the previous service and it will then time out trying to start. So yes, this can absolutely be an issue.
It would be helpful to have the auto runs log or a picture or something. So if you can send us more information on that, we'll help you dig into it. From James, love the show. Running a web application, getting a security information pop-up. I can click the Always Trust Content from this publisher and it'll go away. Is there a way to not have this come up at all, like a pre-trust from publisher on the computer?
So we went a little bit back and forth on this one. Unfortunately, the pop-up that was coming up wasn't an Internet Explorer pop-up. It was a Java pop-up. So it was the Java runtime running within IE that was popping up this particular message itself.
Yeah.
IE actually has no awareness of this pop-up whatsoever.
Yeah.
So if there is anything to turn that off, it would have to come from Java itself.
Yeah.
But I don't know the intricacies of Java when running in the IE environment.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I tend to turn it off.
Yeah. Okay. From Chris, hey guys, love the show. My question is about the start screen. Is that what it's officially called, by the way? Okay. With multiple monitors, if I have the start screen on my left monitor and launch an app such as videos, drag it to my right monitor and close it, when I click the Windows key on my keyboard, the start screen now appears on my right monitor instead. Not the end of the world, but is there a way to pin the start screen to a specific monitor, at least as far as the Windows key on the keyboard is concerned? I know I can drag the invisible desktop window over or just mouse to the left monitor's corner, but I'm a keyboard guy.
Unfortunately, there isn't a way. In fact, this is completely by design. The start screen is entirely by design to be non-sticky. It's transient, so it's supposed to go from one monitor to another wherever it is that you're running a modern application. So no, there isn't a way to do that. Yes, there is a keyboard shortcut as like Win key arrow in order to move the start screen just using the keyboard only from one monitor to another. But you can't actually pin it because it's not designed to be pinned. It's not designed to be running all the time on a particular monitor.
Yeah. Okay. From Joe, in a domain environment standard image, we have given users modify write to the root of C. I know it's a bad idea. When a user tries to drag a file from a network location to the root of C, error message X870522 appears. User can drag files from other locations on C, user desktop, for example, to the root, no problem. Problem only appears when dragging from network location. Any solutions?
So the way that I wanted to attack...
It's made your blood curdle a little bit, right?
It did. I'm sure there are going to be people that understand my pain. You should never give standard users write access to the root of C to create files. Yes, to create directories, and that's the default case for all Windows client installations. They have the ability to create folders, but they can't create files. And this is the way that it should be. The reason why this particular user was doing it was to mitigate an application compatibility problem where it needed to write files to the root of C.
Yeah.
Now, yes, I get that. There are many old applications out there that will do that kind of thing. But the solution isn't to make everybody suffer for that one application. The solution is to mitigate that particular application.
Yeah.
And you can do that with the Windows App Compat Toolkit. So I believe I've talked about this in the past. The App Compat Toolkit has things that will analyze your systems, your environment for upgrade issues from previous operating systems to new operating systems. It also has a tool called Compat Admin that can apply things called shims to applications. And those shims will change the behavior of that one application. It doesn't change the behavior of the entire system. So what you would do in this case is apply a shim to this particular app that instead of wanting to write to the root of C, we have a thing called correct file paths that would direct the writes to the root of C to a different folder. And then that same application can then read from that folder, and that folder could be in a subfolder off of program files or program data or whatever, just a place where standard users could write to it.
Yeah.
But the root thing is that you don't want to have anything writing to the root of C. You don't want to be changing the ACLs on the root of C because that will then propagate down to the various subfolders, and that can break other things in the system. The ACLing of the drive by default is set in a particular way, so that's been tested, heavily tested, to make sure that it works with a vast majority of applications and the system as a whole.
And explain this word ACLing.
Oh, ACLing. It's the NTFS permissions on the drive.
Okay. And next week we're going to do just acronyms for the show. We're just going to speak in acronyms. So
that'll be all awesome TLAs.
Too. Yeah, yeah. From Esmail, I made a terrible mistake by not viewing the compatibility documents of the Symantec Endpoint Protection 2012, which is given by our school, and went ahead and installed it on Windows 8. It went fine on my desktop, but after I realized that the GUI doesn't load and I can't get to the interface, I've been trying to uninstall the thing. It doesn't go easy. I can't stop the service running in the background, can't stop the program from running at startup. It doesn't show on a list of programs set to run at startup. Until I installed MSFix, I couldn't uninstall the program from programs and features. Even after that, it seems that it only took the name off the list, and because I can still see the directory and all the files inside the Symantec folder. All registry values are there too. I've installed Avast now, and with both running, it's really slowed down the startup time. Is there any way to get rid of this antivirus program?
A wipe and load. You can use.
So we're going nuclear on the.
Well, yeah. Symantec does produce a removal utility. I haven't tried it on that particular version of Endpoint Protection. It's, I believe, normally designed for their antivirus software. Windows 8 comes with this handy option under General to refresh your PC without affecting your files. Mm-hmm. I have modified my system so that I can't actually access this without changing my UAC settings. This is an interesting little side note. The modern control panel has the ability to do system level things.
Yeah.
But by default, with Windows 8, when it ships, it will set the UAC slider. It will set the UAC slider to here, which is the default for Windows 7, the default for Windows 8, where you don't get the constant UAC notification for when you're trying to do system level things. I have bumped it up to the top because I do like to be always notified when I'm doing something. Mm-hmm. This is my personal setting. It would not be seen on normal end user systems.
Now, no surprises here.
Now, because of that, there are certain things that you can't do in the modern control panel, such as refresh your PC, because that is a system level thing, and we don't allow showing the UAC prompt in the modern interface.
Yeah.
So in order to access these particular settings, you have to go back to the desktop control panel, set it to the second level, and then you'll be able to use these settings again.
Yeah.
But you can use, you know, refresh your PC if you're having, you know, some issues with your system. That will basically set a restore point back and should get your system up and running, hopefully before the Symantec Endpoint Protection.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you can't do that, you have to go the second level nuclear, which will remove everything, including your modern applications, all your settings, reinstall Windows. From that point, you should be fine to continue going. But with Symantec Endpoint Protection having screwed up the machine, you can't really be 100% certain what it has messed around with.
Yeah.
You could go forensically and start, you know, finding every last file that is signed with the Symantec certificate, remove it, try and attempt to find all the registry locations. But again, it would be rather tedious, and you don't know for certain if you've got them all.
Yeah, you wouldn't be entirely clear if you did everything. So DEFCON 1 is probably a good option, DEFCON 2 if not. So yeah, That'll work. All right, from Eduardo, he says, I'm having a problem with Windows 8. My computer has two SSDs, a processor is Intel quad-core, and the memory is 8 gig. This computer is quite fast, and I just installed the SSDs. There's been no time to slow things down yet, as I keep hearing they will over time, even though these are very modern SSDs. My problem is that the mouse response, it stacks, and the pointer seems to be locked in place when some high disk access or processor-intensive tasks are being executed, such as compiling a large C# program. The responsiveness doesn't get better after the task is ended, and usually I have to turn off the mouse and turn it back on again to regain control of the pointer. But the response problem itself, again, the problem presents itself again very rapidly. So you did some back and forth on this. I won't try to take credit for that. But what did you find there?
It was actually the wireless keyboard and mouse that he has on the system.
Mm-hmm.
When switched to wired, everything works fine.
Yeah.
I went back and this is actually a known issue and we're working on a fix for it.
Cool.
It has not yet been released.
Okay, awesome. All right, so thanks for that one. From Craig, good morning, guys. I seem to be saving up my problems for you. I have two right now, and then he lists three questions that I'm struggling with. On certain websites, IE10 and IE9 before it will basically stop responding or may not come back after a period of time. So you want to address that one first?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. IE, manage add-ons, remove or disable any add-ons that aren't necessary.
Yeah, if you aren't using it, may as well shut it down.
Yeah, 98% of the time, that is what's causing it. Not everything may show up in that list because of the way that certain things are installed in the system, how they hook into Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
Certain toolbars, certain BHOs, they may not show up properly if they're trying to hide themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'd try to figure out what was the last thing that got installed. Really, when you're, again, if it was me and I had access to the machine, when it's having the slowdown, I'd attach a debugger to it, grab a dump, see what modules are loaded and what's actually happening on the system.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is when it's hitting the slowdown, you can get a perf trace of IE,
mm-hmm.
see if there's anything that shows up there. Usually it'll be some third-party component loaded into IE. I don't think I've seen it on just a standard web page where IE will screw up. The other thing that you can do, if these are only happening for certain websites, is look if there is a... none of my sites have it right now. Oh, actually, okay, here we go. TechNet does. You have the compatibility flag here. See if that sets it. Another option that you can try is go to Developer Tools in IE, and you can change your browser mode manually.
Mm-hmm.
See if that actually helps it out a bit. There is also this handy dandy thing, change the user agent string, which will, you can choose from any of the IEs, Google Chrome, Firefox, Opera, Safari, Bingbot.
Yeah.
Change the user agent string and see if the site responds differently now.
Okay.
To your browser.
Cool.
So those are all sorts of different things that you can try from in order of complexity.
Okay. And then his second question, just today, my second hard drive, a 280 gigabyte, became read-only when I clicked on disk management section and computer management admin tools. I've been trying to back up my system to an old Windows Home server, HP MediaSmart EX470. This worked fine for years. I got the message that there was a problem with the status of the disk. It was read-only. I did a hard disk test on boot up from BIOS, and it was fine. Not sure what to do from there.
The disk may be fine. The controller may be going.
Mm-hmm.
If it was attached via USB, there is a hotfix if you're running it on an NVIDIA USB chipset with at least 4 gig of RAM. You can try this hotfix if it applies.
Yeah.
See if that actually helps.
Okay.
It's KB976972.
Okay. And then the third question, which is related to two, so it's really only two questions. Now this hard drive has four partitions on it, and I'd like to remove all of them because I don't need any other partitions. So I have no problem blowing the data away on this drive. And starting over again, I thought disk management would allow me to do that, but I don't seem to have an option to do that. How do I go about accomplishing this task on this?
I use disk part from the command prompt.
Mm-hmm.
So disk part, list disk. So I would select disk 0, and then I'd do clean.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not actually going to type that and do that. That'll wipe out the disk entirely. Make sure you choose the right one, not your system one.
Yeah.
That'll nuke it.
Okay, cool. All right, next question. I bought a new 24-inch monitor and added two other monitors, 24-inch and 26-inch. They're all 1920 by 1200, and they're all recognized individually, and two at the same time can always work through HDMI and DVI. My graphics card is a ASUS HD 6952 gigabyte, and it has two mini display ports as well as one HDMI and two DVI. I tried to connect my third monitor through DVI, then through the mini display with an adapter, and in both cases it's recognized. But when I try to activate the third screen, here's what I get. It doesn't work. So,
we talked about this one before.
Yeah.
That card doesn't support three monitors at the same time unless you use an active adapter on the display port.
Yeah, so that's kind of one of the pain points. I had this, I think we troubleshooted this on my
on your
HP Envy 17.
Yeah.
Same issue. You have to have an active display adapter. There's usually a list of the adapters that are known to be good. So go to the manufacturer's website and see if they list those active ones. And if so, get one of those, and that should take care of it. I've had the best luck in just using a monitor that can use DisplayPort and the right cable. So there you go. All right, next question. How do I make Control-Alt-Delete go to the Task Manager directly?
You can't.
You can't.
It's not designed to.
Yeah. In Windows 8, you can hit Windows X and then T. I'll take you to the Task Manager. It's kind of quick. But,
yep. And there's another one, Control-Shift-Escape. Mm-hmm. Now, the nice thing about... there's actually a technical difference between WinKey X and T and Control-Shift-Escape. One of them, the first one, will launch Task Manager through Explorer. Mm-hmm. Control Shift Escape will not. It will launch it through WinLogon.
Interesting.
So you can't obviously use WinKey XT if Explorer is not responding.
Yeah.
But Control Shift Escape should always work even if Explorer is not running.
Okay. Cool. Interesting. All right. Pick of the week time. It is the pick of the week time, and yours is
Silicon Dust. They've announced two new network tuners which will support DLNA.
So very cool.
Which is very cool because they support cable card. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about here is being able to stream protected content through your house over the network, which is super, super cool.
Yeah.
And some beta firmware for existing HD Home on Primes. Now, currently, the PS3 will support the DLNA endpoint for this. The two new tuners, which is really cool, which will hardware encode MPEG-2 to H.264, which is really nice for the bandwidth aspect within the house.
Yeah.
Because now most devices have built-in hardware decoding of H.264. It makes it really, really nice to be able to stream high-def content over, you know, wireless. Mm-hmm. You know, it's relatively, you can do it over wireless with MPEG-2, but if you go to the HD Home Run forums, pretty much most people will say don't try, use gigabit wired.
Yeah.
I've had some luck with wireless and in the 5 gigahertz spectrum. I've also had really good luck with power, Ethernet over power, the power line stuff. So, yeah, I'd keep my eyes out for this one because this is some really interesting tech.
Very cool. Nice. All right, and I've got two picks of the week. My first one is from addictivetips.com, and it's how to save images from web browsers to predefined folders. It's a little application that you can use. This is something that I do quite a bit. I mean, I have a kind of a graphics design morgue that I keep whenever I see something interesting online.
A morgue. I like that.
Yeah. And then I have pictures I save for my daughter, like cute pictures, stuff like that, just things I want her to see. So this can help save a little bit of time that way. You know, you just use a little keyboard shortcut and save to a couple of different directories. I think it's like 5 directories that it supports here. So it's kind of an interesting tip, and it can save you a little bit of time. So
yeah, it uses auto hotkey, which is something that's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I've used it in the past. So it's a pretty decent app.
Yeah, cool. And the second one I have is really interesting. This is from Mark Rusinovich, and it is walking down, hunting down, and killing ransomware. So it's very interesting. You can see a few different examples of ransomware and the types of things that they try to do to part you from your money and hold your machine in the gulch in between you and your money. So, definitely want to read through this. It's
really funny. Like, I'll see commercials on TV, the, speed up the PC.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at that going, I can't believe that stuff is still on the air. And what's worse is that people still fall for it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, never install that stuff.
Yeah.
Never... We will never phone you. Microsoft will never phone you to say that we've noticed that your machine is slow.
Yeah.
Would you please like to install this software so that we can analyze and debug it? We will never do that.
Yeah.
We will never cold call you.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't tend to cold call anyone ever for any reason.
For any reason at all. All of this software is It's just really, really funny. And now for both of us, we've come across systems like this in the past.
Yeah, other people's systems,
other people's
not our systems.
Own. No.
Fortunately.
Well, it's safe computing practices, yeah. Man. Mark goes into a lot of details about diagnosing the system and removing it. Mm-hmm. We tend to be of the mind of nuking the machine.
Yeah.
It's like, while it's a great exercise if you're, you know, in the security space to go and build up the knowledge on where this kind of stuff can sit on your system, which is great.
Yeah.
I've done it enough times in the past. It really is the recognition of what is normal versus what is abnormal on the system. That is the thing that you want to build up is, you start looking at processes that are on the system, you look at enough systems, you go, yep, that's normal. Hey, that doesn't look quite right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wrong version number. It shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Those kind of hints will help you understand what is a properly functioning system versus something that just doesn't look right.
Yeah, if you've ended up in a situation where you've got this going on your machine, you've been compromised to mm-hmm. a pretty good degree. And so it's not time to just, like, clean things up. It's time to rekey the locks on the house. So just start from scratch, pave that machine, and there's some good practices down at the bottom, like Windows Defender and some things that you should do to try to prevent this from happening again in the future. But I would start from a clean slate.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of us have, deep attachments to older hardware or older software. You've done things to your machine in a particular way that that made sense in the past,
mm-hmm.
but could actually be opening up for further compromise. Like, I know a lot of folks might want to install remote access software, right?
Yeah.
And if you've had it sitting on your desk for a really long time, it's one that you bought a license for a really long time ago. You'll want to reinstall that on your systems because, you want to have remote access to it. But those types of software may have been compromised in the past. It might have weak encryption. It might have bugs in it where it doesn't just allow you access, but it allows the wrong people access to it.
And if you haven't used it in 2 years or a year or whatever,
right.
you're not going to use it. Probably, so just get rid of it.
Right.
And after that period of time, it's probably out of date and needs an update anyway,
mm-hmm.
in which case it might be a security lapse. So, just uninstall stuff that you don't use.
Yeah, and you start, looking at advances in the hardware, like what we've done with Windows 8 and new UEFI-based systems are things like Secure Boot. There have been a lot of security enhancements over the past few years that have been built into systems that you might want to take advantage of that will help prevent things like this from happening. I find them really rather fascinating, right? It's like, okay, how locked down can I make my system and still feel like I'm perfectly productive on it? What are the things that I'm truly missing where I have to say, well, I need to back off on this?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, when I have to make that choice where I need to back off on a particular security setting, I want to go back to the product team that made the security setting and say, look, how do we make this still secure but, help the people out there that want to do the things that they want to do?
Absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, you can send an email to defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave a message in the comment forums, and we will get back to you there. But we like the email so that Gove can go back and forth in the middle of the night, and I can roll over, look at the email, and laugh. So that's the show for this week. See you next week.
Take care.